This is In the News for December 4th, 2005. I'm Scott Bergwin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. Our first story today is from Boston.com, written by Phil Couvret from the Associated Press, and it's out of Montreal. Protesters worldwide rally against big polluters and global warming. Thousands of protesters took to the streets and cities worldwide Saturday to demand urgent action on global warming as delegates continued their work at an international climate change conference to review and update the Kyoto Protocol. Police said about 7,000 people marched in downtown Montreal, some dressed up as polar bears. Five environmental groups, including Greenpeace and the Climate Crisis Coalition, delivered a petition signed by 600,000 Americans to the U.S. consulate in Montreal, urging President Bush and Congress to help slow global warming. Sarah Binder of Montreal's Urban Ecology Center said, quote, "We're worried about climate change, about ways of life in the Canadian Arctic disappearing," end quote. Organizers said 10,000 people marched through London, passing Prime Minister Tony Blair's home on Downing Street, where they delivered a letter demanding the government reaffirm its commitment to Kyoto with legally binding targets on emissions reductions. Chanting and blowing whistles, the marchers denounced Blair and Bush for their perceived environmental failings. Some held banners depicting Bush as, quote, "wanted for crimes against the planet," end quote, and advising, quote, unquote, "ditch Blair, not Kyoto." Canadian Inuit traveled to Montreal from the isolated Arctic North to join the protest there. Indian leader Jose Cusigac told the Associated Press that he brought along hunters, trappers, and elders to reassure them that people from the South were not indifferent to their plight. Cusigac said, quote, "It was important to show there are a lot of people in the world who care," end quote. Canada's Environment Minister Stephanie Dionne, who is presiding over the 10-day UN Climate Change Conference in Montreal, also took part in the march and said final negotiations next week involving some 120 environment ministers and other government leaders would be crucial to improving the Kyoto Agreement. Bush has been widely criticized for pulling out of the treaty, which binds industrialized nations to lower greenhouse gas emissions. The United States, which spews out nearly 25% of the world's carbon emissions, was the target of many demonstrators Saturday. In Boston, speakers called on Massachusetts to join with seven other Northeast states that are putting limits on carbon dioxide emissions from power plants. Governor Mitt Romney has not signed them because he's concerned that the pact would increase utility rates. Several environmental groups rallied at Cathedral of St. Paul, an Episcopal church at the foot of Beacon Hill. About 60 people attended, said Mark Breslow, director of Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Breslow said, quote, "We're trying to get Governor Romney moving on this. This potentially creates a regional system similar to what Europe has created. People see this as a potential precursor to a national system," end quote. The pact aims to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from power plants by 10% by 2020. The benefits are numerous, Breslow said. He also said, quote, "We won't lose our beaches, we won't lose our oak trees, we won't have more intense storms," end quote. Protests were expected in 32 countries, including Canada, the United States, Japan, Germany, France, Bangladesh, Brazil, Australia, and South Africa. Again, that was from Boston.com, written by Phil Couvret from the Associated Press. Next story out of Iraq, submitted to Agence France-Presse. Iraqi journalists condemn U.S. military media tactics. Journalists in Iraq say they are shocked by revelations that the U.S. military paid Iraqi newspapers and journalists to run positive articles about U.S. activities in Iraq. Well-known Iraqi journalist Ahmad Sabri said, quote, "It's a scandal that the U.S. administration would use methods like these, which contradict all principles of the profession and seek to defraud public opinion." He continued, "A newspaper should reflect the reality on the ground, not sponsored information aimed at improving the image of the United States, which in reality has failed in Iraq," end quote. The Los Angeles Times reported Wednesday that dozens of stories written by information operatives or operations soldiers were secretly placed with media outlets in Iraq through a defense contractor to mask the military's involvement. The report relied largely on leaks from members of the military establishment who say they fear that U.S. attempts to influence the Iraqi media may actually be subverting a free press. As recently as Tuesday, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld pointed to the free press in Iraq as evidence of the progress made in Iraq. Knight Ridder newspapers on Thursday reported that the military also was paying Iraqi reporters up to $200 a month to write sympathetic stories. It said the payments were made to members of the Baghdad Press Club, an organization set up by U.S. Army officers more than a year ago. An Iraqi female journalist who preferred to remain anonymous told AFP about working for the Baghdad Press Club, which is headquartered at the airport for 3 months before quitting. She said, quote, "We were called to go out with them on various educational, reconstruction, health, or aid project and asked to write positive articles about them in exchange for $50, she recalled. She continued that after 3 months, I left. The whole thing was ridiculous and against the ethics of journalists, she said, recalling a U.S.-sponsored trip to Sadr City where people called her a traitor and threw rocks at her. Another Iraqi journalist in Baghdad, who also preferred not to be named, was more philosophical about the entire affair. He said, quote, "It's true that it's fraud, but a professional journalist shouldn't fall into such a trap," end quote. Major General Rick Lynch, the U.S. military spokesman in Iraq, cast the matter as an effort to counter lies spread by al-Qaeda. He said, quote, "We do empower our operational commanders with the ability to inform the Iraqi public, but everything we do is based on fact, not based on fiction," end quote. Military officials would not comment on whether newsprints or newspapers and journalists were paid to plant the articles. Lieutenant Colonel Barry Johnson, head of the U.S. military's press department in Baghdad, cited operational secrecy in withholding information about the program. The White House announced on Wednesday that it was, quote, "very concerned," end quote, about the report. Again, that was from Agence France-Presse, just off their newswire. The next story, from Associated Press writer Bert Herman, dated yesterday, Saturday, December 3rd, Russia's native people worry about spill. This is out of Sakachi Alyan, Russia. Yevgeny Osadyaya is beside herself with worry, wondering how her family will survive when the toxic slick flowing from China pollutes the Amur River that provides a livelihood for her family and her native Nanai people. The 47-year-old cried, "Not eat fish for a whole year? How will our nation, the Nanai, live? We'll all die," end quote. The native peoples of Russia's Far East, many of whom rely on the Amur for their food and income, are among those most endangered by the imminent arrival of 100 tons of benzene released into a tributary upriver after a deadly Chinese chemical plant explosion November 13th. The spill prompted Chinese authorities to shut down the water supply for Harbin, a northeast city of 3.8 million people, for 5 days. A second city, Jiamusi, which has about 500,000 people, also shut down a water plant on the Songhua River, fearing contamination, officials said Saturday. Russian authorities expect the slick to cross the border December 10th or 11th, and 3 days later reach the regional capital, Khabarovsk. Restrictions on eating Amur fish could last a year or even several, as toxins linger in the winter ice and riverbed, experts say. The native people live from fish, but trading in fish will likely be banned, said Natalia Zamina, spokeswoman for the Khabarovsk regional government. She said authorities would strive to inform the villagers that eating the affected fish is even worse than drinking the water. Nearly 11,000 Nanai people live in the Khabarovsk region, comprising the largest native group here, according to the 2002 Russian census. Other minorities include the Evenki, with 45,000 people, Ulchi at 2,700, and Nivchi at 2,500. Many of the Nanai who retain their own language are fishermen whose Eastern Siberian ancestors once made clothes from scaly fish skins and who still make shoes from fish. Samples of the skins are shown at the village museum in Sakachi Alyan, some 37 miles downriver from Khabarovsk. A traditional robe on display features a series of concentric diamond designs in red, a color representing the dragon called Mudur in their language, which Nanai believe is a spirit of water. The Nanai are already also coping with years of industrial pollution by chemicals such as phenol, which affects Amur fish in the winter, giving it a chemical smell. Again, that article from Associated Press writer Bert Herman. Not a good situation there, and people that are often forgotten, of course, the indigenous people of Russia. Now a short piece out of Reuters. Union authorizes AT&T strike. This is out of New York and, as I said, from Reuters. Members of the Communication Workers of America authorized a strike against AT&T Incorporated, the union said on Friday, but the company was optimistic about reaching a deal before the contract expires next week. The contract covering more than 11,000 workers expires at midnight on December 10th. The union said in a statement on Friday that it was concerned over proposals to reduce or eliminate retiree health benefits. CWA, or Communication Workers of America, Vice President Ralph Malley said in the statement, quote, the parties are still far apart on a number of important issues, end quote. AT&T spokeswoman Claudia Jones said, quote, we are in daily negotiations with the CWA and remain optimistic that a fair settlement can be reached, end quote. The negotiations do not affect members of the CWA or International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers at SBC Communications, Jones said. SBC acquired AT&T on November 18th, though the combined company is known as AT&T Incorporated. Again, that was from Reuters at Reuters.com. Reuters spelled R-E-U-T-E-R-S.com. And now from High Country News, their latest issue, dated November 28th, 2005, out of Colorado and written by Betsy Marston. Real estate developer Tom Chapman must relish his work, which can be summed up as pulling the Forest Service's chain with one hand while using the other to extract large amounts of money from the wallets of taxpayers. Chapman has become notorious for obtaining land for his clients within a wilderness area or on the edge of one and then demanding that the government pay to get rid of him and his harebrained development scheme. Usually, he gets his way at a tidy profit. Recently, he announced that owners he represents intend to burn down a historic building at the Yankee Girl Mine high in the mountains above the town of Silverton, Colorado. Why would anyone want to destroy an icon of mining, as a local preservationist called it? Chapman says, with a straight face, that Jim and Deanne Kropp, who bought their in-holding this year, merely want to erect a dream summer home with an enviable view right where the mining structure stands. The couple won't burn down the towering building, Chapman says, if they are bought out or if the Forest Service trades them land elsewhere, reports the Denver Post. It's taken more than a decade, but the Forest Service seems finally to have learned that caving in to blackmail only begets more blackmail. As Forest Service Supervisor Charlie Richmond put it, quote, it would be a shame to lose the Yankee Girl, but we can't buy into these kinds of deals, end quote. Again, that was from High Country News, their latest issue. You can find them at hcn.org. That was written by Betsy Marston. This has been In the News for December 4th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I'll talk to you next time.